Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday,
1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time,
and you're listening to you with your host, Avenger Satanus,
and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for tuning in today. I'm Beast Zeno, and this is my co-host, Avenger Satanus. Avenger, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good, as usual. How are you doing?
Actually, I'm kicking fucking ass today, man. Kicking ass.
Good. Good.
Been a very, very nostalgic and weird couple of days, but it's been in a good way, so.
Oh, yeah? Nostalgic how?
Oh, just took a trip with an old friend through an old town that I used to live in, a place that had some pretty fond memories. And, you know, nostalgic in that way.
Cool. I was curious because I sort of experienced the same thing last night. I had a very old friend, a guy I've known since like sophomore year of high school. I had him over to my house last night. We were just talking, catching up on old times, and he was talking about the movie Hot Tub Time Machine, which he recently saw. And he was talking about the nostalgia of that, you know, from the 80s and stuff. It's kind of a retro movie. And then after we were hanging out and talking and eating dinner and stuff, then we went to see the movie Predators. And, of course, that is extremely nostalgic because, man, I remember seeing Predator, you know, like 6th and 7th grade in the movie theater on HBO, on VHS tape. And, you know, I probably watched Predator once every year or two just because it's so fantastic. And now I see Predators, and it's just like, you know, it brings it all back, especially since the movie kicked ass, so.
Yeah, I was kind of, I was a big fan of the Predator movie from the very first one, and funny enough, the second one I think I was a little more of a fan of than the first one, you know, the one with Danny Glover in it.
Yeah.
The reason being, in the first one, you know, the Predator was more of just this unknown entity that you really, you know, you had to draw a lot of assumptions about them, about what it was. You know, there wasn't like a backstory to it or anything. I mean, the movie kicked ass, but the second one seemed to kind of paint this, you know, this tribe of warriors that, you know, they lived and died by this blade. And that's just, I don't know, to me, that's a great notion. So.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, if you see Predators, like the new one, and I'm sure you will, it's got that same sort of tribal kind of predatorial, you know, it lives for the hunt, and it is a predator, and that's its whole reason to be, and its whole, you know, the structure of the society, one can infer, and, you know, its way of life, its philosophy or religion. I mean, you know, it hunts, and that's what it loves to do, and that's what it's about. And, you know, it hunts the most dangerous game, if you will, human beings. So, yeah, it's a great premise. Predators, just, you know, just that alien species is a kick-ass kind of creature and the whole theme behind it. So, yeah,
that actually,
I'm sure there's a new franchise because they'll probably just keep making Predators 2 and Predator 3. That's what I'm guessing.
Well, that's hopefully what they're going for, and rightfully so. Funny though, we're talking about predators, and it's, I'm thinking that's actually a nice clue in for maybe the first thing we could discuss today. The other day I was visiting Jason King's channel because, well, I frequent it, as you well know. And I noticed that he had commented on a really old video that he had put up, not like really, really old, but I mean, he had to have made it, at least a year ago. And the name of the video is Predatory Nature. And the reason that I got kind of sucked into it is, because that idiot, Petey Valentine, was on there talking trash, and Jason had commented back to him. But while I was sitting there, you know, typing out what little bit that I had to say to that dude, I started listening to it, and I started really thinking about it again, you know, is Satanism, is it a predatory belief? I mean, is it predatory by nature?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess I'm just throwing it out there for open discussion, so.
Yeah. Well, why don't you work us through your thinking here? What's your opinion?
Well, we'll start with my opinion. Okay. I believe so. I believe that, when something is adversarial in nature, when something opposes things, that it's constantly looking to engage in some form of battle, and that is by definition, I think, predatory.
Yeah.
So I tend to side with Jason King on this and say that, yes, you know, Satanism is about, you know, the predatory nature. It is about survival of the strongest, so to speak.
Right.
But it goes beyond that, actually. It goes it goes into the idea of domination. And this, I think, is where the Cthulhu cult crosses with it. I mean, we were actually talking just a little while prior to the show about your recent, your recent playing with somebody that's pretty well known in the satanic community, and their misunderstanding of the slaughtering of the non-believers that is described in the book Cthulhu Cult.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what actually kind of strikes in my mind here is that, this prison, whether you take it figuratively or literally, or in your case, I would think you take it both ways.
Yes.
You know, this prison is, you know, the bars are held up by people who aren't willing to accept that this is the nature of things,
that
this is the world. And so, by default, you know, if some blood was needed to be shed to allow people to actually be completely free, you know, taboos and, false notions, but then so be it, you know?
Right. Yeah, it assumes that as we start gaining ground and rising in power, that there's going to be a backlash, and non-believers and such are going to be throwing obstacles in our way, throwing a wrench in the works, and just trying to thwart us, possibly by any means necessary. And so to protect ourselves and our belief system and our way of life and to fulfill our own destiny and such, yeah, I think a certain amount of blood would probably have to be spilled. And I think that's okay. And I think that's appropriate. for when things do start changing and the law of the land conforms to our will. And yeah, all of that.
Right. Well, I mean, I know that this is how you see it. I just don't understand how somebody who claims an adversarial path can't understand that, you know, at some points, you know, extremes may need to be taken.
Right. Well, you know that a lot of times I'm very diplomatic and certain figures and the left-hand path, you know, certain people just consider me, you know, more of a diplomat, and I try to meet people halfway a lot of times and things like that. And there are certain sections of Cthulhu cult where I don't do that, where I don't pull any punches and I don't soften my words or hedge my bets. I just go full force, very passionately, and tell it how it is. And I kind of draw a line. And for those people that don't like it, you know, too fucking bad. And sometimes, you know, people pick up on that, then they don't like it. It's maybe too extreme, or it's too draconian or undiplomatic, but you can't always be the guy in the middle trying to make peace with everybody. Sometimes,
yeah,
you know, you got to go out on a limb and be a warrior and be like, you know, and be a leader. Say, hey, this is the way it's got to be. If you don't like that, fuck off, or, you know, or join us, or die, or whatever.
Right. Well, I understand that. As a matter of fact, it's kind of funny because, I mean, one of the things that you stated here just a few minutes ago is about some people thinking that you're too much of a diplomat, Matt, and I actually happen to be one of those people, don't I?
Sometimes you do, yeah. Sometimes you let me know that occasionally I can be too nice a guy and I should maybe put my foot down a little bit more, or, you know. But then again, like just a few days ago, you were thinking, well, maybe, Venger, you should pull back on, you know, the arrogance just a little bit. And, you know, so, as you know, I can go both ways in that regard.
I do. I'm just kind of cracking up because you're talking about me in third person there just a few minutes ago. So it's kind of funny. I don't often get talked about in third person, man, so.
Yeah.
But, I think that the egotism that I was talking about, you know, it's warranted up until the point where it's no longer working for the better, you know?
Right, right.
And then that's what I was really warning you on. You know.
Yes. I agree. You know, as LaVey pointed out, the counterproductive pride thing, you know, it's great up to a point, but then when it starts working against you, then it's going to be a problem, and no one wants that. So I try to be very confident and even aggressive at times, but then there's a side of me that's very humble and diplomatic, and I try not to step on too many toes. But at the same time, you've got to be passionate about what you believe in, and you've got to try to inspire people and get people talking. Sometimes you've got to confront people and their ideas in order to get action and create change. So
sure.
It's a fine line. It's a fine line.
I totally agree with you there. It's a very delicate balance. In fact, I think that it's kind of it's ironic that we use the term cult, because that often leads people to think that that it's not really so much about challenging a person as it is about getting them to completely submit to a particular ideal, when that's not the case. at least in my eyes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, yeah, the word cult is so loaded with ideas that, in a way, it's very stimulating, just like LaVey called Satanism, you know, a religion, and called it the Church of Satan, because, you know, that sort of thing is stimulating to people, and it creates a reaction of, I don't know, fear or loathing or awe, or, you know, people thinking you're a complete wacko. And that way, it's good, because it encourages new thought, and I think it has the potential to be more of a conscious foundation, whereas something like Christianity is so watered down by now and so, you know, accepted by the masses that people don't even think about things anymore. Or, you know, people just, I don't know, they're just being led around and, I don't know, letting all sorts of negativity and bullshit in that is just clouding stuff up, and, I don't know, it's just mechanical and not very productive.
Well, let me pose a question to you, V. When I first came into the occult world, and particularly into Satanism, there was a kind of a chuckle that happened behind the doors of our minds, and that chuckle was the term satanic cult. Now, the reason that this was a chuckle is because this label was placed upon us by fundamental Christians, and we had to kind of laugh about it, because originally Christianity, as its origins were derivative of a cult.
Right.
Multiple, actually, cults.
Yeah. And I think, just to interject quickly, that Christianity had more power, at least potentially, or bared more fruit as a cult, you know, when it started, than it does now. Now I think it's lost the mission. But back when it was a cult, it actually stood for something, and it was about certain things, about, you know, waking up and self-discipline and looking at the world in a new way. Whereas now it's, oh my God, it's about what? Child molesting, and it's about money, and it's about, you know, judging people and hate and violence. It's the opposite of what it should be. I just want to interject that, so continue.
Yeah, to finish my question, my question is, I see kind of a trend going within Satanism that worries me. The trend is that, you know, we're no longer really principally, you know, taking that concept of being the outcast and embracing it, and there's becoming more of a unified, systemized mentality that's kind of opening. I really hate using the term, but a herd mindset.
Yes.
You know, there was this element of scary when I first got into this. I might, you know, be going down a road that I can never come back on, you know, and it was filled with raw emotions, and those raw emotions fueled really deep insight. You know, I think that's what's that?
I said exactly. It's the fact that it was an unfamiliar road that gave it that power, because you weren't aware at that time of, like, you know, every little fork in the road and every little, you know, pothole and nook and cranny and, you know, every little inch of that road. When it becomes familiar, then it loses a lot of power, and it, you know, it just becomes mechanical, you know, just like we become mechanical and, You know, you start sleeping at the wheel when you're driving down that road, you know, the more times you drive it. But something new, something fresh, if you can keep it, like, new in your mind and always re-examining it, then it will still have that power and will still allow you to use it to gain new states of higher consciousness.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that, you know, that was ultimately my deal, you know, is my question. Because it seems like we're not aware of it. We become so, what's the word? We become so antagonistic for the sake of being antagonistic.
Right.
Where before
yeah,
it was about. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, before it was about, you know, not just that sense of individuality, which everybody seems to want to hold that banner up. You know, everybody wants to hold up the I'm an individual banner. But that's not what it was all about. It was about being that balance, you know, being the anti.
Right.
You know, so the question becomes, you know, when everybody is completely anti, then does submission become satanic?
That's a great question, and a difficult one to answer, I imagine. Shoot, I was going to say something a minute ago, but.
That's all right. While you're thinking, actually, I want to give a quick shout because I believe it's JK's daughter's birthday today, so I want to wish her a happy birthday.
Oh yeah, happy birthday.
I think that's why Lucky 13 hasn't dialed the numbers yet.
Probably.
Sorrel, I'm assuming, is probably carving on somebody.
Yeah. And Satanic Zach is probably asleep. Dark Fool is...
Oh.
Dark Fool.
He's probably doing his own deal. We've got a wedding to attend or something today.
Oh, yeah.
He seems to go to a lot of weddings, man. That's what I like about this guy. He's constantly going to weddings.
Is it in, like, the Wedding Crashers to, like, pick up on chicks? Or
no, I don't think
or?
So. I think it's just somewhere deep inside of him, he celebrates the new beginning. And so he has this friend that's getting married or that friend that's getting married, and he's like, hell yeah, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, it could be kind of in a Wedding Crashers type way, too. You just never know.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, okay. Okay, let's get back because I finally remember what I was going to say.
What do you got?
Okay. Well, you were saying, which I completely agree with, that everybody is holding up that individuality banner. And, you know, at certain points, this may seem heretical to a lot of Satanists or people on the left-hand path. But at a certain point, it's not all about individuality. You know, it's not all about you and you and you, or it's not all about I and I and I, me, me, me. It's about building something. And yeah, you don't want to completely lose yourself or your own goals and agenda in the mix, but it's definitely not all about you. It is about a community, and it is about building something tangible, something real. And, you know, something profound. And a lot of people, I guess, just don't see that. They just want to do their own thing and get what they want and, you know, fuck everybody else. And,
right. And then.
In that way, what makes them different than, you know, the Christian douchebag that is exactly the same way? You know, I try to point that out on the Modern Church of Satan forum, which I recently revisited. It had been like a year since I last was there. But, you know, and one of my videos touches on this too. Like, what's the difference between a Satanist and, you know, your average Christian? If the Satanist is all about individuality and doing his own thing and, you know, not being, getting what he wants, you know, getting paid and not being hampered by any kind of outside, you know, force or entity or, you know, religion or philosophy, you know, if it's all, if it's only about humanism and being selfish and, you know, and getting paid, what the fuck makes a Satanist different than some sort of Christian or Jew or Muslim or, you know, a rapper or, you know, the guy running the cashier at the Quickie Mart? I mean, what makes a Satanist so special if you're just trying to be the average Joe? So hopefully people right. hear that or they read that and they recognize that, you know, at the end of the day, Satanism is about building something. It's not just about individuality and not just about being an asshole. It's about...
Sure, and what I actually think is really kind of comical is the same people with the mindset that we're talking about are the same ones that are so quick to grab the responsibility for the responsible flag and wave that sucker. And, you know, the thing of it is that, you know, the responsibility goes beyond just your, you know, the layers of your skin and the internal being itself. Your responsibility is within your element at that point. You know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but Jason King makes a good point about the lion and the gazelle. You know, the lion is the lion by nature. It understands that its job and that element is its job. You know, that it, right. it plays its role perfectly. And the gazelle does the same, and there's a need for both. And there's a delicate balance as to how many gazelle get away and how many get eaten by the lion.
Right.
You know.
But I think that mankind has the potential to leverage that balance and redirect or even go against nature when it suits his purposes. You know, if the person on the left-hand path is the lion and, you know, your average Joe is the gazelle, then sure, there are certain times when, you know, the predator has to eat or, you know, the gazelle gets in his way where, you know, it's, you know, do what you got to do, no contest. But there are other times when I feel you don't have to play the universe's game and you don't have to slaughter the gazelle just because it's there. You know, why? That's what the animal kingdom is about. Human beings have higher faculties that allow the lion and the gazelle to meet in the middle and cooperate and not try to kill each other. I mean, that would create like a whole different paradigm. A whole different way of being. And then, you know, mankind, if you split them up into lions and gazelles, you know, if they actually work together at some point, could maybe accomplish something magnificent rather than just going through, you know, the rat race, the law of the jungle, kill or be killed, you know, survival of the fittest. That's great up to a point. But then I think you got to move on past that and you got to work together. Because really, we're all prisoners, and escape should be the first thing that comes to our mind and the last thing we think about before we go to sleep.
Right, right. I completely agree with you. I had some thoughts here. I'm trying to get back to them now.
Yeah, 'cause
you just really gave me the first thought that I had. The alien principle that you're outlining here, that supernatural principle, that is, in my esteem, the divinity that we're after.
Yeah.
You know, that is, you know, the deification, so to speak. And that element, the being able to separate ourselves from either the role of the lion or the gazelle, and to take that as you called it, a middle path, but I don't really so much see it as specifically a middle path.
Right.
It's very Eastern.
It's like rising to a level above that. And I think that's what you're getting at.
Right. It's a very Eastern concept. And it's funny because we actually had a nice conversation a little ways back on the Cult of Cthulhu forum, where what's that girl from the ONA's name on
Sugar
there?
Sugar Cube.
That's her. She actually made the point of that, and you know, I had completely and totally, because, well, obviously in Western world you tend to do mostly Western thinking. I'd completely forgotten about that aspect of it. You know, and it's funny because the whole premise for an entire chapter in this book that I'm working on is talking about the balance and the necessity for both light and darkness, you know, and there's got to be that polar opposite to maintain those shades of gray. You know, everything in my esteem exists more within those shades of gray. And I know maybe my presentation during our objective reality series wasn't quite clear on that.
I think we got to that. But, yeah, going to what you were saying about that chapter in your book and the light and the dark, I think in fourth wave terminology, you've got to really experience and get in there with the neutral force or the reconciling force that sort of not only meets the positive and the negative and the light and the dark together, but, you know, it finds a balance and it finds a way to reconcile both of those things together in the same structure. But then I think the farther up we go in the work, or the great work, we can reach a new octave, and then we're at a completely new level than where we were. So really, we're not even at the lion and gazelle level anymore. We're, you know, orders of magnitude above that, on like this alien dimension that is closer to God, and it's like a whole, you know, you're looking down on things from that perspective. It's a whole different realm than we're used to. And getting to that, you know, that's a pretty important part of the process.
Right. Well, obviously, you know, that reflects my thought process. You can see it in my name, which, you were instrumental in helping me finalize.
Yep.
So I do not disagree one bit, and I think it's important to begin to illuminate that Zeno.
Yes. Illuminating the Zeno.
That's kind of funny, actually. I really hate talking about myself in third person, and we're doing it once again. You know what it is, man?
All this shit ties in together. So hopefully people, you know, the more they talk to us and the more they listen and read what we're doing, they get that sense that everything ties in together. It's all part of one giant system. It's part of the great work. It is the great work. And for me, the great work is using the fourth way in a left-hand pass capacity. Using the work or the teaching of Gurdjieff and Ouspensky in a antinomianism and self-deification kind of way. Taking the sinister road. That's the great work to me.
I agree. I mean, at least our great work.
I think other people should be, you know, this isn't just, I mean, yeah, it's what the Cthulhu cult is all about and what we believe. And to a certain extent, we're not trying to convert everybody to, you know, be cultists into, like, you know, increase our ranks and whatever. I think a priority is getting other left-hand path groups, like different varieties of Satanism and, you know, maybe Luciferianism or I don't know, dark witches or mystics or people that worship Odin or something, whatever. You know, getting them situated on the left-hand path and using that to get to something real, something, you know, to Gnosis. Because the left-hand path is great, but, you know, it's the path alone, I don't think that's enough. I think you've got to, you know, you have to have tools. You have to bring things onto this path and walk it in order to get where you want to go. You can't just, you know, start with a left-hand path and then continue and then you become God. I think you need, you know, you need certain techniques and assistance and, you know, certain guidelines and signposts and probably mentoring and teaching from different guides and a map that would help too. All that stuff.
Right. I want to just kind of expound on a couple of things that you're talking about here, because they may or may not be clear to either myself or maybe the presentation in which we're doing. But the first thing that I think that definitely needs clarification is the Cthulhu cult is not looking to convert anybody. I mean, I know you said to some extent, but I want to put this clearly. You know, those that belong to us know they belong to us. Those that are just working along the same path are working towards the same means but exist in different paradigms are, you know, how's the old expression go? A friend of the devil is a friend of mine.
Right.
That's the first thing I think that there's definitely some need for clarity on. You know, I often actually have thought about proposing to you that we close the doors. We don't allow any more joiners. You know,
it's an interesting
thought. What's that?
I said it's an interesting thought. Of course, there are different levels of membership. I don't just mean, you know, the ranks that we have. Or the hierarchy within the Cthulhu cult, but, you know, there are people, there are different forms of membership and different forms of joining and, you know, supporting us and working with us and, you know, being friends with us and things like that.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, we don't want people to join just to say, like, yeah, now we went from 200 members to, you know, 250. Or we went from 1,000 members to 2,000. Like, yay for us. You know, it's not about that. It's not about, you know, numbers. It's about, you know, a community of people working towards the same goal and, you know, having assistance in actually making real world change and, you know, changing the world, changing ourselves. That's what it's about. It's not about, like, you know, adding one more notch to our bedpost in our, you know, cult membership numbers. It's about, you know, making
forging,
real world change. Yeah.
Right. Forging a new beginning.
Yeah, right.
Now, another thing that I wanted to kind of get into that you were talking about is we always put a heavy emphasis. Let's put a heavy emphasis on left-hand path.
Yeah,
and I think that in its way sort of forsakes itself because, you know, we're not talking about removing that right-hand element. You know, that I think we instinctively already realize that there are going to be the sheep on the pasture. You know, the fat is always going to be there.
Right. Right.
And so, That's a good point. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I'm striving for is to create some balance in our own system of thinking. You know, it's good to be challenged with ideas that are outside of your normal thinking process. One of the things that I picked up from my conversation last night with that person that I was talking to after that show. I guess there is a, what's that?
I said, you can mention them if you want.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I did get from Sean Hartnell last night that I thought was interesting is there's actually a term for it, and for the life of me, I can't remember the term for it now, but what he was talking about was where somebody forgets to include something in their analysis because they didn't think about the fact that it would have something to do with what they're doing. It's kind of a forgotten factor, and so it leaves room for error. And I forget what we were just talking about a second ago to wrap this in together, but I'm sure the two connect. So help me out here, V.
Well, just with what you were saying just a second ago, I don't think anything is inarguable. I think there's always, given enough time and thought and effort, I think there's always a way to debate any little tiny thing. There's always an opening. If you look hard enough, you might have to do some logical stretching, but I think that stretch is always possible or always potential. So I think anything can be debated, and I don't think you can create any kind of argument or philosophy or paradigm where there isn't something that can be argued, or, you know, something is always left out. Just like you can't have true objective consciousness, like on a godlike or beyond godlike state. I mean, you can't consider every single subjective reality potential, a possibility, like, in total. It's impossible. So,
sorry, my toddler's cracking me out, man.
No problem.
He spread his blanket out and told me to go ahead and sit down right there for him. you know, when all is said and done, all of these ideals are wonderful. You know, every ideal is wonderful, but practical life application, I think, needs to rule. And the reason that I say this is because it's, you know, the betterment of us can only happen in small movements, but the betterment of generations to come, you know, that's where the big long shifts happen. That's where the major changes take place. You know, if you think about what was the lady on the bus's name? 60s, black woman, had to get off the bus. Is this ringing a bell?
Yeah, is this a phrase you're thinking of, or?
No, this is an actual historical person.
Oh, you mean Rosa Parks?
Rosa Parks, there it is, right there.
Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to think of some, like, catchphrase or... Okay, anyway, go ahead.
Rosa Parks, she was the doorway, the opening to the concept of desegregation, right? Or at least that's what she's credited with. However, I mean, even when I was in high school, there was still some form of... of segregatory thinking going on, and that they were still trying to desegregate. They were busing kids from all different areas based on their poverty level and race to one school to have the right mixture. You know, so, excuse me. Now, I told you not to interrupt me till this was done. Now, you are breaking code. Go watch the rest of the movie. I'll be done in 10 minutes. You don't want to get me upset. Now go. I'm glad that you don't want to, but I told you to, so go do it. We'll talk after the show. All right. And anyway, the whole point was the aftermath of it is still a cause and effect of the thing.
Right.
I totally lost the point. Sorry, I was getting whopped by styrofoam swords as I'm trying to talk and think.
Yeah, no problem. I know what you mean. It takes little steps to get, and I think the whole Rosa Parks thing and other, you know, specific moments in the civil rights movement and other things like that, that's an example of intentional suffering or conscious suffering. You know, you may take your lumps, but it's for a specific purpose, and maybe you don't realize at the time, you know, the implications or the ripples that your action is going to make. But, you know, if you suffer now, you gain threefold later, then that's what intentional or conscious suffering is all about. Going to something you were saying a few minutes ago, I know we were just talking about civil rights and you know, African Americans and stuff like that, so hopefully this doesn't come off as too tarnished or something. Because I'm not talking about that kind of slavery. But when you were talking about the right-hand path, and basically the right-hand path wants to remain slaves of the system, of the world, the universe, of God. And that's what we're rebelling against in the left-hand path. But in the left-hand path, we don't want to be slaves, but at the same time, we're not trying to outlaw slavery. And
right.
I think that's an important balance factor.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's an important statement. Hang on, there's actually a comment in the chat room.
Oh my God.
Civil rights.
We're also into the undiluted truth portion of the show, so we really can talk about anything. So if anyone wants to call in, I know it's a little late. We only have like 11 minutes left.
Yeah. Well, we got Atheist Radio hanging out listening, so I'm going to tell them, the call in number is 347-989-1371. We'd love to hear your thoughts. He just made an interesting statement, actually. He says, civil rights are fantasy, not real, just like Santa and God. I tend to...
what the fuck is that supposed to be? Does this guy even believe in, like, chairs? Or does he believe in, like, grass? Or maybe he doesn't even believe in colors or numbers. Does he believe in the number 3 or the number 15? What is this guy smoking? That's what I'd like to know. So, atheist guy, if you want to call in, talk to us, do so. If you just want to chat about nonsense on the switchboard, that's okay too.
Yeah.
Maybe you understand better what he's getting at, but to me, it just sounds like he's trying to be deliberately provocative, and he's not saying a goddamn thing.
Well, I kind of understand what he's saying. It, it, it seems though with his last statement, which is that the government took away all of his family's property, it would seem that I don't know, maybe he's still reconciling, you know, his understanding of the world.
Well, I would probably be bitter too. I mean, that's understandable. If, you know, but then after a while you gotta let go and do what you can with what you have and not just, you know,
right.
be bitter at the world for the rest of your life. Because some injustice happened to you. I mean, that happens to everybody.
The real, here's the thing. I agree with you, Benjer, and actually, his last statement that he makes here is that he's that we don't know the truth of reality, and that he's in an inescapable poverty. And I have to say, you're talking to two people here who absolutely and totally do understand the reality of the prison that we live within. And you're just one more inmate kicking numbers, bud. You know,
right.
And maybe your situation's worse than mine or Avengers here. But, you know, in the end of this all, it all comes down to the same thing. You know, the only type of freedom we have is living in the fantasy of it.
Right.
You know.
I want to lay down a challenge for every single person listening. And that is, if you can allow yourself to be guided, to be mentored, and if you can come here to where I am in South Central Wisconsin and be guided and be mentored and work just as hard as I do, then I will put you up in my house and I will personally train you, and you know, I will work with you to not only change your life and my life and everybody working with us in the Cthulhu cult, but eventually the entire human race. You know, I'll make sure that you have a roof over your head. I'll make sure that you're fed. But if you have what it takes to, you know, to pick up stakes and live and work with someone that has yours and everyone else's best interest at heart, and, you know, actually follow rules and create some self-discipline for yourself and work your fucking ass off, then you want to change your life and change your future, then, you know, do it. Get in contact with me. Make it happen. Don't just bitch about stuff. Don't just, you know, whine and wish your life was different. You know, put your money where your mouth is and, you know, get in contact with me and, you know, set something up and then come out and do it. I mean, you know, Cthulhu Cult Boot Camp, whatever you want to call it, you know, whatever it was in Fight Club that they were doing. You know, I'm not saying that we can go on and but, you know, we're going to destroy Blockbuster's video collection or something like that. But there's certain parallels with what they were doing at Fight Club. You know, Project Mayhem, you know, it's about activism and going out and actually doing it and being it, being the cause. If you can do that, then I will put you up, I will feed you, I will show you the way. Because that's what I do. I'm a leader. So that's a challenge for anybody listening. If you want to do that and actually change your life and change the world, then, you know, this is your Peace Corps. Do it. Get off your ass and do it. No excuses.
What an interesting mix, man. What an interesting mix. I've got to say, well, there's 5 minutes left in this show, and it's undiluted truth time. So I've got to say, I've kind of missed this, man. It's been a while since you and I just grinded steel against steel on the air without, you know, having to patiently wait for somebody else to complete their thoughts.
Yeah. It's weird, just you and me again.
Yeah, it is weird. Maybe we got too strange for everybody.
Either that, or people on the West Coast don't want to get up at, you know, 10 a.m. to listen or call in and talk to us. But no,
I can't imagine that last beer was that good, man.
Depends on the beer. Depends on the pussy you pulled, you know, after that last beer, I guess. Whatever.
Well, I got to tell you, that's no excuse, because I stay up late at night and still make my ass in here in the morning, you know?
Yep. No, I know. Oh, it probably has plenty of listeners. People maybe just don't want to call in, which is fine. You and me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the listeners are solid. I've already been checking it. One of the things that I wanted to bring out right now, because maybe it'll help clarify and make it so that people really understand what the Cult of Cthulhu is about. I do not blindly follow you. Right? I mean, you can agree with me on this?
Oh, totally.
Rather, we are two people working for the same end result.
Yep.
And we both agree upon the method. And that's what the Cthulhu Cult really is. People coming together, working towards the same end result, and agreeing upon the method.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people that belong to a school or a university, they're not, you know, followers, and they're not indentured servants or something like that. You know, they're people that want to work and want to learn and try to improve themselves and, you know, get out there and do something with their lives and, you know, maybe improve the world a little bit as well. And that's what the Cthulhu Cult is. You know, it's a university of the left-hand path and of the fourth way. And we use H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu mythos, you know, in most of our classes or curriculum to get us there. That's what it's about. So, yeah, it's not about following a leader or, you know, kissing ass or impressing anybody. It's about and what you put in is what you get out. So, you know, if you want to study hard, apply yourself and all that jazz, you know, you're going to get farther along than someone else that just coasts by or just wants to seem cool by saying that they're part of our organization.
One more, because we're running out of time here. One more little quick thing. Blood Annihilator, you're sitting there in the chat room, and you're just going off on this angry slander of God, which, you know, to some extent I can understand, but I can tell you this. Lucifer, Satan, he wouldn't be behaving in that manner. He doesn't work that way. He's not a blatant confrontation. He's the character in the corner who's moving all the pieces in the room. That's how things get done. That's how things happen. It's not a face-to-face thing. It's more of a Sun Tzu-style approach. So you may want to... you may want to, you know, pick up a book on the fourth way and learn to be mindful of those negative emotions, because those will be your own undoing, and they actually work against what we're trying to do here.
Right. Yeah, negativity can easily, I can understand if someone is negative for a moment or, you know, a week, or maybe even a year of your life. But then there comes a point where it just becomes a vicious cycle, and it'll just bring you down. I mean, you know, it's just like doing hardcore drugs. Like, those first couple times, you might get something out of it. You might get energy. You might get high. But, hey, if you keep doing heroin and cocaine or whatever, or ecstasy, or, you know, sprinkle dust or whatever the fuck it is, for like a year or more, I mean, just look at yourself or look at the other people that affects. You know, you're not doing yourself any favors. You're just bringing yourself down. You're killing yourself. It's no good. all that negativity, you know, it's not helping. Get over it and live your life. Do something.
10 seconds, man. So, yeah, motherfucker.
yeah, motherfuckers.
Later.
Enjoy life, bitches.